You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 406 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Wednesday evening. There is plenty to discuss, as you might imagine, in advance of the 2018 NBA draft, which is going to be taking place tomorrow, or basically today as you're listening to this. It's almost midnight here on the East Coast, so we are nearing draft day. That is, of course, the headliner of the podcast, but the Hawks went out and made some news, or at least a member of the Hawks went out and made some news on Wednesday evening that we have to talk about first before we get into all the draft stuff. But I promise the draft stuff is coming here in a moment. But the headliner is that Shams Charania of The Vertical reported on Wednesday evening that Dwayne Dedmon will be opting into his player option, you know, exercising his player option for the 2018-19 season. And I have now confirmed that with a league source. Looks like that's going to be the case. Dedmon's going to be making a $6.3 million base salary for next season. Also has $900,000 in likely incentives that he actually met all of last year. He met all of that and was actually able to earn. Last year he had a base salary of $6 million with $900,000 in incentives. So he earned that entire $6.9 million. If he is able to replicate that, he'll be earning $7.2 million. But at the very, very least, Dedmon will be opting in here to $6.3 million in base salary. A little bit of a surprise here on my end, frankly. I would have told you that I thought Dedmon was going to opt out. It wasn't a no-brainer by any means. There are a lot of these player options, especially from player options that were signed in 2016. That kind of 2015, 2016, those kind of opt-in decisions that seem pretty obvious. There have been a few of those that have already happened that were kind of no-brainers. Dedmon isn't quite on that level, although I still think that I probably would have opted out had it been Dwayne Dedmon in a vacuum, but this is why agents make their money. Frankly, you know, Dedmon is securing a real solid salary here in a league that does not have a ton of money to go around this summer. I do think Dedmon would have been certainly looking for contracts from teams that are basically limited to exceptions at this point in time. Whereas, you know, teams normally, at least the last couple of years, there's been a lot of cap space out there. But this year, most of the teams that have cap space are bad teams. And the ones that are not bad teams, like Philadelphia, are probably having really high level discussions with guys that are like max level free agents, not necessarily focused on Dedmon. So that is probably the backdrop for why he would elect to do this at this point. Also, I should say this, he'll be 29 years old in August. He just had the best season of his career by a wide margin, and I thought that was probably be the reason why he would look to enter the market this particular summer. But in the same breath, again, this is a very, very tight free agent market, and as a result of that, it looks like he's going to be sticking around, at least sticking around on this particular contract. I will say it's noteworthy in a lot of ways that he made this decision well before June 29th. That was the deadline for both Dedmon and Mike Muscala's player options. Muscala, no word there officially on his at this point in time, but more than a week ahead of time, that definitely raised my eyebrows a little bit with regard to that. And I will say he is immediately trade eligible. That's something that I wanted to make sure I had right, so I consulted the smart people that know the cap stuff better than I do. Dedmon could be traded immediately, I will say that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm predicting that, but it would certainly make a little bit more sense if the Hawks had something in the works here for Dedmon, or if he had something in the works to not take the entire allotted time to make the decision, just because I think, you know, there's some backchanneling that could be happening. But still, you know, now it's important to note that he's now under contract again officially for next season in Atlanta, and unless he is traded between now and the season, he will be on the Hawks roster. I do think that he would have some value if the Hawks wanted to trade him, and it might be a good idea for the Hawks to trade, to at least try to see what the market looks like for Dedmon, because Dedmon is, I think, a legitimate starting center in the league right now, and the Hawks already have John Collins on board, and they could add, of course, at least another big man in this class, given that they have four picks. Wouldn't necessarily be at number three, but it could be at number three. You know, and even later on in the class, they have Robert Williams, Mitchell Robinson, Mo Wagner, Wagner, if you want to pronounce it correctly. People have been correcting me. I do understand that that's the actual pronunciation. And Chimezie Metu, those are kind of guys who probably will be second round pick types, and we'll get to those guys in a second. But there's a possibility that the Hawks could add another big man in this class. And of course, I think John Collins is a center long term, at least someone who is going to play some minutes at center. So if you're Dedmon, you know, take the security of a real live contract, you know, that could be worth up to $7.2 million. That's a lot of money in today's landscape, and really any landscape, because you know, Dedmon made a lot of money last year, but but before that, has never been a super high-paid player, so that's a huge bump for him. So congrats to Dwayne Dedman for guaranteeing himself that kind of money. And it'll be interesting to see if he can replicate what he did last year. If he's able to do that, he'll be hitting the market next summer as an unrestricted free agent at the age of 29, almost 30. That's not too old to get a multi-year contract, especially if he plays the same way that he did this year. And that's sort of a calculated risk that Dedman will be having there to sort of lock in this salary and then hopefully be able to command a multi-year deal next summer. So, you know, plenty of time to talk about Dwayne Dedman between now and the season. But if he is traded, it will not be a huge surprise to me, just because that would sort of shed some light on why he would have opted in this early in the process. But just keep an eye on him in the very near future. And a reminder, Mike Muscala, as I mentioned before, his deadline is coming up for June 29th. Not a ton more on that right now. I think I would guess that Muscala opts in at this point in time. Again, not an absolute no-brainer in the way that Dedman's was. I actually long thought that Dedman would opt out, Muscala would opt in. So it looks like, you know, my money would now be on both guys coming back for next season. And that could be another consideration for Dwayne Dedman, honestly. Not that Muscala is going to play over Dedman by any means. We saw that this year when Dedman was definitely more of a factor throughout the season, but Muscala is another body around who certainly is an NBA quality center. So that's something to keep in mind moving forward if you were to opt in before June 29th. With that said, please subscribe to the podcast. That'll take this at least 1 second before we move into the draft stuff to remind you guys to do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Google Play, all those places where you listen to podcasts. I really appreciate everybody that's already done that. I always say that on the podcast, but I really, really do appreciate all the feedback, you know, positive and negative. I try to improve the show as much as I possibly can as a result of that feedback. So you guys, it's definitely very, very valuable to me that you would interact with me on Twitter and all that fun stuff. So really appreciate it. And without further ado, we can get into the actual NBA draft stuff. The Dedman thing took us for a loop, but here we are with the draft. Moving on, we can talk about some of the buzz that's out there, some of the reporting that was done and published on Wednesday with regard to sort of, you know, thematic statements, that kind of fun stuff at this point in time. First, actually, on Tuesday evening, Mike Scotto of The Athletic reported that the Hawks could be looking to trade up, actually, from 19 and 30, potentially packaging those picks together to get back into that 12, 13, 14, 15 range. Not a big surprise there. That's something we've been talking about for quite some time, but some firm reporting there from Mike Scotto, who's actually been pretty plugged into the Hawks in recent years. He's got a lot of things first, honestly, so something to keep in mind there. And that was not a huge thing. We'll talk about that in a second just in terms of just theory there, but there'd be some guys that I would be looking to do that for potentially. Also some guys who I think are mocked in the top 14 or so that I would not do that for necessarily in trading 19 and 30, but it's definitely a fluid spot. 19 is a spot in this class where I would not be necessarily thrilled to be. I do think most of the depth is a little bit later in this class, and then obviously there's a little bit of a teardrop somewhere in the top 15 or so in this class for me. So 19 is sort of a dead zone if everybody stays where they're supposed to be, but as we all know, that actually never happens, and someone will fall that's not supposed to fall, and we'll talk plenty more about that in a second. Other than that, though, most of the attention has been placed on the number 3 pick, obviously, at this point. Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer reported on Wednesday evening that the Bulls, Knicks, Magic, Clippers, and Mavericks are all, quote, exploring deals with the Hawks when it comes to their number 3 overall pick, presumably to go up and get Luka Doncic, but also some Mo Bamba love there, according to KOC. Jake Fisher of Sports Illustrated reported that the Magic have actually already offered the number 6 pick and what he terms as at least one additional first-round pick in the future. Not a big surprise there. You know, most of these teams, really almost all of the teams that will be linked to the Hawks and trading up, it's basically going to have to be future picks for most of these teams. The Magic are really the only team that has like an on-roster asset that would make any sense there, and that would be Jonathan Isaac. But even then, probably wouldn't be necessarily enough to go up 3 spots. I mean, it's sort of a debatable thing, I will say, but most of these teams, especially, you know, Memphis, especially Dallas, these teams don't really have a ton of roster assets, so you're always looking about future picks at this point in time, and we can sort of debate as to whether that would be appetizing enough. It always depends on what the offer is, but the Hawks are at least engaging in discussions with the number 3 pick in order to trade down. And not a big surprise here, but Chris Mannix of Yahoo reported that the reason the Hawks could be looking to move back, or at least one of the ways the Hawks could be looking to move back, is to go out and get Trae Young. That's not a new report. Obviously, there's been a lot of speculation and reports reporting that the Hawks are interested in Trae Young, and that trading now would be the most realistic avenue to get Trae Young in Atlanta. That'd be something that I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to do. At number three overall, I think if you're trading that pick, you're taking a deal that in a vacuum makes sense. I don't think that Trae Young should be the only consideration there by any means. And frankly, I think the price goes up quite a bit if Doncic is still on the table at number three overall. I think both that's my opinion and probably the opinion of the league overall. I do think that the best ransom that the Hawks could possibly command is if Doncic is on the board. But in the same breath, I would just take Doncic more than anything, and it would take a lot to blow me away in an effort to trade up to get Doncic out from under my nose at number three overall. So those three reports and plenty else sort of circulating here. Basically, everyone's saying that between Sacramento, who now apparently is more interested in Luka Doncic again, the Kings hold all the cards at number two overall. And then once they go with what they do, the Hawks then hold all the cards, at least for a little bit. And we'll see what transpires. But all the reporting is out there that the Hawks are at least considering trading down. That, again, is not a huge surprise. Travis Schlenk acknowledged that he's been in discussions for a long, long time to move up and down at various points in this class. It basically started at the draft combine as soon as the lottery was done. He said that on the record, that all discussions started then. They've been going pretty much ever since. So again, no surprise that the Hawks are at least making the pick somewhat available. Doesn't mean they're absolutely going to trade it, just in the same way that last night's reporting from Adrian Wojnarowski and the ESPN guys did not mean the Hawks were definitely going to take Luka Doncic. It's definitely something at this point in time where you want to keep your guard up with all the rumors, positively and negatively, whether they support your opinions or not. It's one of those things where I'm trying to do the same. You have to keep an open mind, and nothing is done until it's done. So between now and the draft, basically the only thing that everyone's assuming at this point is DeAndre Ayton's going number one, and everything else, whether it be the Kings evaluating Doncic, Marvin Bagley, and Michael Porter at number two, the Hawks obviously with a number of candidates to be drafted, plus all the trade stuff at number three, and then you get to Memphis and Dallas. There's plenty more to discuss, and we'll talk about specific players in a second with my personal analysis at the end of the podcast, but that's all the buzz that's out there at the time of this recording at about 11:30 or so on Wednesday evening. So just take that for what it is worth. Quickly, back to the Scotto report and just a couple of discussion points that I wanted to make on trade up situations. I do think trading down is kind of linear. You're trading down for assets, and if you do that, I think the only thing I want to say about that is the Hawks probably would not want to go too far down in this class for me. I think there's a pretty big drop off after the top, 7, 8, 9 guys in this class, and it's one of those things where it's kind of tough to gauge. I do like a few of the guys in the 9 to 12, 9 to 13 range. Miles Bridges, for one, is someone I really like, really have always liked, and I think I value him probably higher than others. I do like Mikal Bridges as well. I like Robert Williams a little bit more than probably the consensus does, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I like him quite a bit, whereas I'm a little bit lower on guys like Kevin Knox and Lonnie Walker specifically, and I think maybe a little bit of Colin Sexton now that he's sort of rebounded a little bit. I think he's now been seen as more of a consensus top 10 pick again after a little bit of a swoon in the middle of the process. I would not be taking Sexton quite that high, I don't think. So I would say out of those players that are like routinely mocked in that top 15 range, the guys that I'd be a little bit lower on in terms of just trading up for would be Walker, Knox, and to a certain extent, Sexton. Everybody else that I mentioned are guys that I like. And if the Hawks want to make the big swing to go up without trading down from three, it's kind of tough to get back up as high as they would need to take Trae Young or Wendell Carter Jr. But those would be the two guys that I'd be trying to really go out and get. There's some of the buzz that's out there that Trae Young could fall all the way to 10 or 11 or 12, somewhere in that range. If that's the case, the Hawks could certainly go up and get him without having to use the number three pick. They could use the pick they have this year at 19, of course. They also have 30 and 34, of course. And then they have next year's pick from Cleveland that could be a very interesting asset for a number of reasons. But it's tough to protect it, but still a pretty valuable asset, especially when compared to the number 30 pick this year, because we just kind of know that'll be the number 30 pick, whereas the Cleveland pick could be as high as 11, 12, 13. Next season. So keep that in mind as well. I do think, people have always been asking me how far the Hawks could get with 19 and 30. I think just 19 and 30 probably gets you to maybe 14, maybe 13 at the very highest, somewhere in that range. If you go to the Cleveland pick and 19, you're probably talking about maybe up to maybe 9 or 10. That'd probably be as high as I would say there, and that would take some certain liberties on the Cleveland pick in the future, and that team that probably wants to look down. So there are some all-in scenarios the Hawks could certainly do. when they package three first-round picks together. I'd be a little bit wary of doing that unless you're going way up into the pretty much the elite tier there. Aside from that, I think that you're probably looking at a modest jump into the 11, 12, 13, 14 range, which is a pretty big jump, obviously, from 19. And I don't think that 19 is the best place in the world to be in this draft. I've actually stated on the record that I think I'd be almost more willing to move down. There are a few guys where I want to go up and get, like Miles Bridges, as I mentioned before. But aside from that, I think it actually makes a little bit more sense to move down in a lot of ways, get a future pick or two. But, obviously a fluid situation. Nobody that I'm in love with at 19 necessarily. There are guys I like that we'll talk about here in a second. But again, just real quickly, guys that I would like to move up for in theory, without knowing the price: Miles Bridges, Mikal Bridges, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe Robert Williams. That would be my guys. And Williams will only be the case if they had Luka Doncic already as a pairing that I would kind of enjoy there at three, and then, somewhere in the 12, 13, 14 range. Guys I would not love to do that for: Knox, Carter, and Sexton, although there's definitely a point in which I would certainly still do that. 19 and 30 for Lonnie Walker, 19 and 30 for Kevin Knox wouldn't be a terrible decision by any means. I wouldn't necessarily go out and offer that probably, but if it was offered to me, it would not be a situation where it's probably 50-50 in my mind. I don't love those guys, but they are better than the options that are probably going to be there at 19 overall, even if it's a little bit more marginal of an increase than I would actually say it. Than at least that people would say it is on paper, just because I think people see the gap between 12 and 19 as big, because, from 5 to 12 is pretty big, and, maybe even, 15 to 22 is pretty big, but in this draft, getting from 14 to 19, unless you're talking about a specific guy or two, the gap isn't that wide, in my opinion. All right, moving on to the actual sort of pick-by-pick analysis here. I will say that was all the actual buzz that's out there. The rest of this podcast, at least for the most part, will be my opinion on the guys that I like in this class. I pledged early in the process that I would share my more candid thoughts on guys that I prefer and don't prefer at the end of the process, and here we are at the end of the process. So it's time to do that. So that's going to be pretty much all of the buzz stuff, and now we'll talk about what I would like to do, or at least what I would like to see the Hawks do in this class. At number 30 and 34, it's very difficult to say. That's sort of the qualifier all the way here, is that we just don't know who's going to be there. It's all educated guesses and mocks and what you're hearing. I will say I'll try to be reasonable on what is going to be available here, but in the end, somebody always falls, somebody always goes higher than you think. So that's just all the caveats that I will lay out at this point in time. In a perfect world, at 30 and 34, the guys that I think I like the most as a pairing and both individually is D'Anthony Melton of USC and Melvin Frazier of Tulane. I like both those guys a lot more than consensus. On yesterday's podcast with Cole Zwicker, he revealed that he actually has Melton as a lottery pick. I wouldn't be probably that high, but I do think he's one of my top 15 or 16 guys in this class. So at 19, even, I'd probably take him, which we'll get to in a second here. But Melton would be a no-brainer pick for me at 30 or 34 if he's still available. Melvin Frazier, a good friend of the program, Sam Vecini, has him as a top 20 pick. I think he's probably somewhere around there for me as well. 6'6 with a 7'2 wingspan. Definitely a sort of a defensive freak prospect potentially, and a guy who, if he makes shots, is going to be an awesome player. I think his jump shot is a little bit safer than Melton's at this point in time. Both guys are not exactly knockdown projected shooters, but I kind of believe Melton's jump shot more than some do, and he's just such a good player in a number of different ways. Defensively, he's sort of a monster, 6'8 kind of wingspan, hybrid, can guard multiple positions, can really do a lot offensively even without a devastating jump shot. And Frazier's definitely more of a role player type 3 and D, but I think his defensive ceiling is pretty darn high. I like both those guys quite a bit. Also, at 30 and 34, this is sort of a longer list, but these are guys that I would be pretty happy with at number 30 or 34. Mitchell Robinson, if the Hawks take Luka Doncic at number 3, Robinson is a very risky pick, but I do think if you have some safety higher on like Doncic, I'd be definitely good with Robinson as sort of a gamble pick at 30 or 34. Kyrie Thomas of Creighton, Shake Milton of SMU, Josh Okogie of Georgia Tech, Villanova's Dante DiVincenzo, UCLA's Aaron Holiday, Villanova's Jalen Brunson, and French guard Elia Kobo. I do think Kobo is probably going to be gone, and I think a couple of these guys are going to be gone. I do think DiVincenzo and I think Okogie probably are more likely than not to be gone by 30, but if they were still there, I would like all those guys. I know it's sort of a wide smattering, but again, I'm trying to be at least proactive and sort of see all the scenarios. A lot of the guys could go anywhere from 22 to 35 in this class, and because the Hawks have two picks in that range, I'm just trying to lay a lot of things out there. So again, guys that I would really like to see other than Melton and Frazier would be Robinson, Kyrie Thomas, Shake Milton, Josh Okogie, Dante DiVincenzo, Aaron Holiday, Jalen Brunson, and Elia Kobo. Guys I'd be fine with, basically, you know, I would sort of shrug with acceptance on a lot of these guys. I actually kind of like a few of these players, just a little bit lower probably. But Bruce Brown of Miami, Landry Shamet of Wichita State, Mo Wagner/Wagner of Michigan, Zanon Musa, Jerome Robinson, and Javon Carter. I think people are going to be surprised to hear Musa's name on that list. I don't love him at all. I do understand the appeal. Offensively, he's a very intriguing prospect. I just don't think he's ever going to be able to guard defensively. And I think people that listen to this podcast regularly probably know this, but I'll just say it again. I'm predisposed to liking guys who can be two-way players, especially defensively. I really like defense more than the average person, I would say. So Musa being a lower on my board is not a big surprise. I'd be totally fine with him at 30 or 34. But you know, as we'll get to 19 here, he's often mocked in that like 20-ish range. I would not be okay with him at 19. Honestly, I would not like that pick at all. You know, it's not a situation where it's like completely unreasonable because he is an intriguing prospect offensively. Just not what I would be doing earlier in the class. At 30 and 34, the guys that I would not take that are often mocked in this range are Anfernee Simons, Gary Trent, Hamidou Diallo, and Rodion Kurix. I'm sort of anti-stash in this class. I think the Hawks have these four picks, and people just assume that they can't make four picks. I am not there. I would be happy for the Hawks to make four picks in this class. They have plenty of roster spots. This is a deep draft, especially in the 30 for 34 range. I'd actually be looking, if anything, to buy another pick potentially in the second round. I know, you know, having five rookies is not necessarily likely, but if the Hawks were to move up in this class, I would be actively looking to buy a pick somewhere in the late 30s, early 40s range to try to add another piece to the puzzle here. Nothing off the charts, but there's some guys that have real value that could last into the 40s who are mocked in the 40s, like Shamet, like Javon Carter, for instance, like Mo Wagner, like even Chimezie Metu, who we talked about a little bit earlier. Not a guy that I'd be prioritizing at 34, but if you were telling me you were picking at 40 or so, sure, sign me up for a shot at him. So I'm anti-stash. There's not really a perfect stash in this class. As I mentioned before, you know, Kurix is not a guy that I'm really all that interested in. Musa seems to want to come over right away, as does Elie Okobo. Those two guys are the best international players aside from Doncic. Those guys want to play right away, at least according to all the reporting. So probably not stash candidates. And you know, after that, you have to get all the way down to Isaac Bonga, who probably is like a late 40s, early 50s kind of prospect. I would not be reaching to just to stash someone in this class. So take guys that can come over if you want to, or trade them. But I'd actually prefer a trade versus a stash in this class, just based on the guys who were actually available in the Hawks range. So I know there's a lot to take in there, but a couple of, I think it's pretty easy to see the value in the backcourt, especially, you know, Khyri Thomas and Shake Milton as like 3-and-D players. Okogie and DiVincenzo, better athletes, probably a little bit higher upside wing guys who are a little bit, there's not that big. Okogie's got a long wingspan, he has a 7-foot wingspan. Dante's more of a combo guard offensive type, but a lot of talent in that range, I will say, you know, and then you get guys that I would actually just be okay with, like Brown and Shamet and Wagner and Jerome Robinson. We'll talk about Jerome Robinson a little bit more here in a second. But he's a guy that I think I'm polarizing, at least that I'm different than the consensus on Jerome Robinson. Anyway, moving on to the number 19 pick, anybody that I like at 30 and 34, I wouldn't necessarily just absolutely hate because I still like them as prospects. Just probably a couple of those guys feel like reaches. I do think ideally, guys I'd be looking for like in a perfect world situation, Troy Brown of Oregon, Zaire Smith of Texas Tech, or Robert Williams of Texas A&M, if he were able to fall that far. There's been some mocks. I believe Sam Bassini's recent mock draft over at The Athletic actually has Robert Williams falling all the way to 19 and the Hawks, and he's paired with Doncic in that scenario. I think that's kind of a perfect, that's probably the best 3-19 combination that possibly exists, in my opinion, for the Hawks, is Doncic at 3 and Williams at 19. I think that's great value on Williams. I don't like absolutely love him as a prospect, but I think he's probably a top 15, 16 guy in this class. And given that he's a rim running big, that'd make a lot of sense with Doncic. I really love that scenario. So shout out to Sam for putting that out there. But anyway, you know, more realistically, I think Troy Brown, Zaire Smith would be awesome picks there at 19 overall. And of the guys that I discussed at 30 and 34, I would totally be fine with De'Anthony Melton, Melvin Frazier, or Elie Okobo, all at 19 overall. May feel like a little bit of a reach there, I will say, on all those guys, at least according to the consensus. But I have taken Melton, especially in mock drafts at 19 overall. I like him that much. He is a guy who I, again, have in the top 16, 17 picks for me. So if he's there at 19 and there's nobody else that I have ahead of him on this list, which is basically after Troy Brown and Zaire Smith and Williams, my next guy is Melton on my big board. So I'd be cool with him at 19 overall. And then Frazier and Okobo, I probably wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to take those guys at 19, but I'd be okay with it if the Hawks fell in love. Other guys that I would be okay with the Hawks taking at 19, sort of neutral valuations there. Chandler Hutchinson of Boise State, Kevin Huerter of Maryland, Jacob Evans of Cincinnati, Josh Okogie I mentioned before from Georgia Tech, and Aaron Holiday from UCLA, who I also mentioned before at 30 and 34. Kevin Huerter has been a very, very popular pick. I do sort of see it now more than I did a couple of months ago. I do think there's some concerns defensively, but you know the shooting definitely plays there, so I'd be on board with that. I wouldn't necessarily run down the aisle to hand the card in for Kevin Huerter at 19, but I do see it, and the shooting is very enticing. Hutchinson's a guy I've always liked. Definitely a less flashy pick than Werner would be, even because he's just a little bit older and had a longer career at Boise State. But someone who's pretty polished, I think he's going to be a solid role player in the NBA. Jacob Evans, 3-and-D type, has I've heard some rumors and I've seen some tape of his shooting mechanics. I guess it changed a little bit since the end of the season. That worries me a little bit right now. And by the way, Kevin Werner is actually injured right now with a shooting hand. I'm not worried. It's about a 2-month timetable, and it's actually already been a couple of weeks since that actual report came out. So plenty of time for training camp. But if the Hawks were to take Kevin Werner, not going to see him in summer league. So if that's something that you worry about, that's something to keep in mind there with Kevin Werner. And again, Okogie, two-way guy, obviously a great athlete. Georgia Tech local product that I've always enjoyed. I thought he was underrated for a long time at Georgia Tech. And then Okobo as sort of a playmaking point guard type if the Hawks want to, especially pair somebody in the backcourt if they were to look for Dennis Schroeder's next guy. I think Elie Okobo is probably the best of the available point guards there. I do like Jalen Brunson and Aaron Holiday as well, but Okobo seems to be pretty much consensus ahead of those guys at this point in time, at least sort of in the overarching way. My short no thank you list at 19 overall, guys that I've seen there in the past. Mitchell Robinson seems a little bit high to me at 19, although I do, it's hard for me to blame the Hawks necessarily if they fall in love with him, because his talent is just, he is a lottery talent. He's a monster talent. So I wouldn't criticize that pick, because that means I kind of trust this front office and this coaching staff to perform due diligence there. So if they like Mitchell Robinson enough to go 19, I would kill it. Although I think it's a little bit early for what all the risk factor that you're taking there. I would not take Musa, as I mentioned before, at 19 overall. It feels too high to me. Also, I would not take DiVincenzo at 19. That's probably a little bit controversial, and I'd be more okay with him than a couple of other guys, but I just feels too high to me at 19 for Dante, even though I kind of like his game. And finally, Jerome Robinson was the player I teased a second ago. He's now, I guess, seen, at least in some circles, you know, ESPN has a lottery pick. I just do not see that at all. Even at 30, I would not be overwhelmed with Jerome Robinson. I think I have him somewhere in my, 30 to 35 range. I am not in love with Jerome Robinson at all. I don't really see what other people see. Offensively, I guess it makes sense in that he can create his own shot. He's a very smooth, capable shooter. Definitely could be someone who's a bench scorer, a very effective bench scorer type in the NBA, but if not for Trae Young, he'd be the worst defensive player in this class. I think, at least of the guys who are in the top 40 picks or so, Robinson is a very, very bad defensive player right now. He has more length than Trae Young does, has probably more aptitude to be better than that and eventually than Trae Young does, but still somebody, though, I would not be looking to prioritize number 19 overall. In fact, I was sort of moved to even tweet and kind of laugh about this when, I'm not a shot at ESPN by any means. I do trust Jonathan Givony quite a bit. But his most recent mock had Trae Young at 12 and Jerome Robinson at 13, both guys going to the Clippers. And then pairing them, of course, with Lou Williams, who I love Lou Williams, but it's not a great defensive player. So having Trae Young, Jerome Robinson, and Lou Williams in the same backcourt would be must-see television for a number of reasons, which we'll just leave it there. But anyway, Jerome Robinson's not a guy I would take at 19 overall, even if I know I'm too low, at least compared to the consensus on Jerome Robinson. In fact, he's probably the biggest split I have of any single prospect right now. I just do not see it at all. So on the low side, he's the guy I'm low on. On the high side, it's probably De'Anthony Melton. I do get the feeling that a lot of people are starting to come around on him a little bit. So I think I'm not necessarily alone on Melton. I do, again, just real quickly before we get to the 19 pick, I do think 19 is sort of a dead zone. I would be okay moving up or down from there just because, I just don't think there's a ton of value. Like, 19 to 25 in this class, the jump is just not that big. Again, unless someone unexpectedly drops, I just don't necessarily see dropping. So just want to say that out there again. Would not blow me away at all if the Hawks were not making the 19th pick. Even whether they move up or down is kind of up for debate, but we will see what transpires in the near future. Of course, number three is the headline pick. I've said this for a while now, but I will be taking Luka Doncic if he's available. That's kind of the no-brainer choice for me. I think I uh, I said that a lot on this podcast, but I think, you know, he's a very, very high floor, also has a high ceiling. I see the passing, I see the shooting acumen. I know he didn't make a ton of shots at the EuroLeague level, but his jump shot is not something that I'm concerned with at all. His shot selection will improve in the NBA, I'm pretty sure. And athletically, I have fewer concerns than some. I won't tell you that he's a great athlete. I will not say that, but I think the way he thinks the game and the way that, you know, he's actually, you know, sort of sneaky big, like 6'8", 230. He's a full-size, like Joe Johnson level of size guy on the wing. So I like Luka a lot. I think it's a no-brainer for me, and that's not breaking news from my mouth, I know, but he'd be the pick at number three. If not for Luka, if Luka's off the board at three, if he goes two to Sacramento, I would be leaning towards Jaren Jackson. In fact, I would take Jaren Jackson. I would say that out loud. The gap between Jackson and the other guys is not as big. I do think the gap between Luka and Jaren is bigger than the gap that I have between Jackson and guys like Marvin Bagley and even Mo Bamba or Trae Young. Like, I think that gap is smaller. But with that said, I would take Jackson over those guys. I just really believe in his defensive potential. I know I value defense, again, as I mentioned before on the podcast. I do value defense at a high level, but he's the best defensive prospect in this class for me, and that includes Mo Bamba. I think Bamba is a better rebounder. I got to saying that I thought Jackson was better at everything than Bamba. That's not true. Bamba is a better rebounder at this point in time, but that's the only thing on a basketball court that I think that Jackson does not do better than Bamba at this moment in time. I do think that Bamba, it's easy to get sort of tantalized by Bamba because of the measurables, because he's so good on camera. His interviews have been very good. I totally understand all of the stuff with Mo Bamba. But with that said, Jackson was better on film than Bamba this year. It's not really debatable, in my opinion. And Bamba is 16 months older than Jaren Jackson. Jackson's the youngest player that's projected to be in the first round. And he has a lot of growth potential there. I do think, you know, offensively, there is some concern about him offensively, just that his ceiling isn't super high. But I would argue that Bamba's is not very high either, frankly. I don't really see a ton more. I guess Bamba is more of a lob threat and all that stuff. But Jackson's a much, much better shooter than Bamba at this time. I know that Bamba has the, you know, shooting videos, all that fun stuff, but I think Jackson has a higher offensive floor, a higher defensive floor, and just is a better prospect than Bamba. Jackson versus Bagley is very interesting in a lot of ways. I will be the first to tell you that Bagley's a better offensive prospect. It's not really up for debate. I think, you know, Bagley, I think, is a guy who's probably going to average 20 points in the NBA at some point. You know, the thing for me is defensively, it's really tough for me to get past the evaluation with Bagley. I don't see him as anything that's going to be even an average defender in the league. I think there's a path to that based on his mobility and athleticism. I think he could certainly be a guy who is a good switch defender. I think it's probably better at his role than he actually will be a rim protector, but I think you're going to have to pair him with someone who can protect the rim. That's sort of a weird fit with Bagley, and I'm not as sold on his offense as some other people are. I don't necessarily see the absolute star that people see offensively. I do understand the projection there, like the Amari Stoudemire comparison is one that I actually would endorse. But that's a very high-end outcome for Bagley, and I, unless you can project that, which I would not do. I think it always comes down to, this is something I've been saying for a while now, but you know, projecting outcomes is always interesting. It's like, what is your baseline outcome? What is your average outcome? What is your high-end outcome? What is your realistic ceiling? What is your floor? What is your realistic floor? It's always kind of difficult to discern, but I do think Bagley is going to be a plus offensive player, but the defense scares me enough to where I would not take him over Jackson Jr. at this point in time, even if I would not yell and scream necessarily if they take Bagley over Jackson at number three, provided Luka Doncic is gone. As for Trae Young, I think I've actually come around on Trae Young a little bit the last month or so. I was a little bit lower. I would not take him at three. Let me say that on the record. If the Hawks were to trade down into the, you know, at least 6-7 range, I would be okay with Trae Young at 6 or 7, provided that the rest of the package is appetizing for me. I would not be looking to move down if Doncic is available at three, unless the offer is just ridiculous. I think he's that good and that much better than the rest of the guys available. But yeah, it's all fluid until we actually know the offers. And of course, I will weigh it on Twitter and in writing form if the offers are consummated at that point in time. If the Hawks elect to move down, I will certainly be analyzing that both on tomorrow's podcast and in written form. But yeah, Trae Young would certainly be fine with me in the Hawks uniform. And again, I think of the guys who would be realistic-ish trade prospects for the Hawks if they were to move up from 19, not down from 3, I think Trae Young and Wendell Carter would be the guys who I would be targeting, along with Miles Bridges. That would be my trio of guys, and Young has easily the highest upside there. One random take that I wanted to put out there that probably won't apply to the Hawks unless they get back into the, you know, 8, 9, 10 range is that Wendell Carter is a guy I love. I just can't figure out a way to talk about him a lot in the Hawks sphere. I can't put him ahead of Jackson. I can't put him ahead of Bagley, although that's pretty close, I think. Same with Bamba. I do think Carter will be better than one of those guys in the league. I'm not sure which guy it's going to be. It's not an original thought necessarily. I think Carter's floor is so much higher than some of these guys. In fact, I think that more than half the time, Carter will be better than Mo Bamba in the league. I just think the other half of the time when Bamba is better, it's going to be a lot better because Bamba's ceiling is so high. I think the average outcome for Wendell Carter is higher than the average outcome for Mo Bamba, for instance. That could kind of tell you what I think about Wendell Carter. Again, I would rather have Bamba in a vacuum because Bamba's ceiling is higher, but I just wanted to always get that out there. Carter's one of my favorite prospects in this class, so I really like him. Not a big surprise at that, but because of where the Hawks ended up, no real chance to actually get him without some weirdness in terms of trades or a big fall from Carter, but I do like his game quite a bit. I'll put that out there as the only guy I kind of haven't really talked about much because he just does not seem like a guy the Hawks could actually get their hands on. But if they trade down, then sure. If something weird happens, the Hawks trade down and Trae Young is not there and the guy that they want, I would be certainly endorsing Carter in the 6-7 range if they do not go with Trae Young. So if that happens, you'll hear me yelling from the rooftops to take Wendell Carter. So stay tuned for that. Anyway, I hope that really sort of sums up my thoughts accurately. Obviously, it's tough to evaluate every single guy on the podcast, but I think over the last month or so, I have done quite a bit of analysis and had a lot of guests on. I would encourage you guys, if you have some time between now and the draft, to go back and listen to all the podcasts. I had Brian Schroeder on, who's a great resource. Robbie Callen with some hot takes for sure. Sam Vecenie, Chris Stone, Coles Wicker, Jason Walker, Tyler Jones, all these guys who know a lot about basketball and a lot about these prospects have come on the show. I've tried to tee them up and get their opinions out there as well as my own. So hopefully you guys enjoyed all the way up to the draft. It's one of my favorite days of the year, if not my favorite day of the entire sporting calendar. I love the draft. I think that probably comes through on the podcast and in my writing. It's just something that I really enjoy. I've been covering it also for dimemag.com. So if you guys want to read more of my thoughts that are not necessarily Hawk specific on the draft, you can find them there in advance of the draft. But please go back and check out all those podcasts, subscribe to the pod. I really appreciate it. Everybody's already listened to them, but certainly I would endorse all those interviews as a great resource, as well as just all of those guys just doing good work on the internet. It's a very good sort of friendly community around the draft. So thanks for listening, everybody. I really appreciate it. We'll definitely have another podcast after the draft is over on Thursday evening. It might be recorded like 4 a.m, depending on how crazy things get. I will be at the Hawks facility and be talking to Travis Schlenk and probably a player or two if they can get on Skype from Atlanta. Obviously, the top guys will be in New York, but we'll have plenty of content, I will say, on Friday morning. So please stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you guys, I guess, in a few hours.